Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joshua.
Is it konnichiwa?
Konnichiwa.
Konnichiwa. Yay. Hi. I'm so excited because Brennan is joining us today. Yay.
Hello, hello, hello. I'm so excited to be back.
Yes, and I am super excited to talk with you about Godzilla. But before we get there, how's everybody doing? What's up? What's going on? Brennan, we'll start with you. Sorry, that was kind of an open. Joe's like, what are we doing? I have no idea. We haven't seen you. We talked about the new Scream. We talked about, the Scream series back in like January. So what have you been doing since then?
Well, since January. I mean, no, I've been doing fine. Basically, hiding inside my house, sneaking out to watch movies every now and then. But so many movies are streaming, and I'm hard-pressed to be mad about that fact, even though it's currently imploding underneath our feet as we watch.
Yeah. Yeah. What have you seen lately that you really enjoyed in the theater? Let me be specific. Like, what have you actually left your house to see that was worth seeing?
It was worth seeing.
Oh no.
The thing about me is that I don't have very good taste. But no, actually, I don't even know. I'm going to redirect the question because I don't actually have an answer. So I apologize. And I talk about like the movies that I'm seeing all the time. I want to talk about TV shows because no one ever lets me do this.
Yeah, please.
Please.
I'm sure Joshua is caught up, but I am caught up on season 3 of High School Musical, the musical, the series. They have 2 new episodes.
Oh my gosh, you got me.
Joe, are you familiar with this series
whatsoever? I'm familiar that it exists, in the same way that I'm familiar that the Dalai Lama exists. Like, I've never met her. Uh-huh. I don't know her as well, but I also know that I know a couple things. I know that this is the series that gives us Olivia Rodrigo.
Indeed.
This is the series where there's a lot of internal drama.
Yes. Yeah, and I was going to say, and in season 3, this series that takes back away Olivia Rodrigo from what it seems like.
Oh, is it? So is she in it? Is she not in it?
She's in it, but she's in her own little bubble, just filming scenes with random actors and not actually interacting with any of the other main cast.
Oh, no.
And word is she's leaving at the end of this season, which...
Oh, well,
whatever. Good for you.
Good blessings. Blessings for her.
Uh-huh. But yeah, so season 1 of High School Musical, the musical, the series is a very fun, weirdo meta mockumentary that's a very... reasonably solid satire on what it's like to be in a high school theater program. And then theater 2 absolutely just shits its brain out its ass and has no idea what it's talking about. It forgets what theater is and keeps on proudly applying film terms to things that theater people do. A theater person snobbily corrects someone that the people who work on lighting are called grips. And it's like, well, that's not actually true in the theatrical space, but keep on keeping on. Anyway, it's an increasingly bad show. It gleed out even faster than Glee did.
Oh no.
And because Glee slowly started to crumble from a show where all the musical numbers are diegetic and actually being performed in a reasonable narrative way into we are a musical and we're Sarah Jessica Parker is bursting into song on the street and stuff like that, which I don't mind. But this show has started to devolve into we are just going to snip in a music video that takes place in this entirely lateral space from where the plot is happening. And it's, I don't know if I'm getting older or what the thing is, but I love shitty like Disney Channel original music. I loved the original High School Musicals. I have Be a Star from Life Size on my iTunes, you know, the Tyra Banks song.
Brennan, I love you so much.
Thank you.
Eve is great no matter where you go, Brennan.
Uh-huh. I'm just happy for Joe because I think the same is true for Joe. He's like, yes.
Well, hold on. I'll let Brennan finish his thought and then I will.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying like these songs are polished and polished and polished until there's absolutely nothing. And your gaze glances off of it. And it's really Go Girl, Give Us Nothing. It's just, I want something. And I don't care if it's shallow and silly and whatever, but it's just nothing. And also they had this horrible caterwauling cover of Do You Want to Build a Snowman from Frozen on the most recent episode that might be one of the worst things I've ever witnessed. Anyway,
was it the worst or the best?
No, like legit worst.
Okay, that's what I mean.
I mean, first of all, anything that like tries to be too like we're in on the joke, like too meta for their own sake, already instant fail, like fired, no paycheck. Like this is High School Musical, the series. Like, no, go to jail.
I think it's a very delicate tightrope to walk. And I think it actually does it in season one. And then, like I said, they lost the plot.
They might as well call it High School Musical based on my novel Push by Sapphire. Like it's on that level of like very long names. But anyway,
Joe, our souls are intertwined because I made a Precious Space in the novel Push by Sapphire joke not but 3 hours ago.
Oh,
that's amazing.
You need to like text me when you do that. I'm a high school in the original three High School Musical movies. I'm a High School Musical 2 person. I think like I listen to the music from High School Musical 2 more than the other ones just because I think it's also the most fun. It gives off like Saved by the Bell when they're at like the Malibu Beach Club or whatever the hell, you know, ever a hell place. And they also have like a cut song that's like, you know, Humu Humu Nuku Nuku Apua'a, which is the state fish of Hawaii. But
I
you
will
know,
say that song does not hold up to modern scrutiny.
No, it doesn't. And I'm glad it's not. Yeah, it definitely doesn't. That being said, like I agree with you, Brennan. Like I was on the Glee train until, you know, we mashed up Let's Have a Kiki with Turkey Lurkey Time from Promises. Yeah.
Oh, I was clinging to the caboose of Glee until it flew completely off the rails and burned me alive with it all the way to the bitter end.
Oh, you mean like was it the chorus of trans people in one of the last episodes?
Oh God.
Or was it the like Marina and the Diamonds How to Be a Heartbreaker?
The heartbreaker in the hotel. I like that. I like that sequence. It's so silly.
Yes, this is what it's like to be me and be completely alienated from a conversation when you're talking to the true horror people.
Hey, I think it's wonderful, Joe, that sometimes you get a fellow traveler on the show that can speak, you know, both our languages. I think that's great. I think it's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yes, I mean, you know, again, the first episode that Brennan was on, it's like, you know, it's basically the both of us, our two fandoms, you know, encapsulated into one beautiful human being. So
I love it. Thank you. I have not seen any of these High School Musical things. And now that I've said that out loud, yeah, exactly. I know Joe's going to make me watch it now. I remember what it was. I did see the South Park episode, of course, that like lampooned the whole thing that I thoroughly enjoyed. But yeah, no, I did not watch those things. When was the first film? God, I feel like I was in high school or something when that came out.
It's like 06.
Okay, so no, yeah. I wasn't in high school.
Well, it might have been earlier because I remember that the High School Musical cast, I think, graduated the same year I graduated. So it was seven. I think three came out in seven.
No, the original came out in 06. Three came out in 08.
Oh, wow.
Well, Joe, Wildcats. You're getting old, you know, you're the dates. Like, when was that? I can't remember where that film, that picture was made.
I will say that the finale of High School Musical 3 has these kind of like headshots of all the cast where they're singing the final song, which is called High School Musical. And you see all of them like grinning into the camera like it's the closing credits. But Monique Coleman, she is delivering this last shot of the graduate, slow dawning realization of horror that I don't know where it's coming from, but I loved it.
Well, she's the oldest cast member, like on paper. Like I don't know if that has anything, but I know that Monique Coleman they kind of Stacey Dashed her for Clueless. You know how like Stacey Dash was the oldest on Clueless? So Monique Coleman was also the oldest on the High School Musical set.
Oh. Interesting. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, I don't mean to hijack the entire podcast.
No, are you kidding? We bring you on to talk about these things. I know right now, you know, if Matt from Horror Movie Night is listening, he loves this. He loves the, I think he watches High School, the musical. The
Matt
musical
loves series. High School Musical, the musical yeah. series. And
yeah, so if nothing else, I know one set of earballs is like, this is great. I love this.
Joshua, you know, we're going to get a text. You know, we're going to get a text about this as soon as this airs.
As soon as it's out.
Okay, good.
Yeah, just, what are you watching?
Forward these to me.
Yeah. What are you watching? Tell you what. What are you watching, Joshua?
You know, I snuck out and I went to the theater and I saw there was like five of us in it. That Gone in the Night, the new Winona Ryder film. I think they released it for like a day or two in the theaters, I guess, just so they could have like a theatrical release. I always love seeing Winona doing anything, you know, that's why I watch Stranger Things, even though she's just kind of like, ooh, you know, like for a lot of it, which in this film, it's a lot the same. She even like is wearing like the same, like this like flat green button up. I'm just like, okay. She just like left the stage of Stranger Things and went over to the other stage to like do it. It was very twisty. It wasn't at all what I was expecting. I don't know if I thought it was good. Like, I think it's worth watching, but it was a really weird story. So, you know, it's like she goes to like a cabin in the woods with her boyfriend or they, you know, Airbnb and like, oh, surprise, there's another couple that's staying there. And, you know, and so when everybody goes to bed, the next morning she gets up and like the woman and the couple and her boyfriend have absconded. And so she spends the movie like trying to find him, find out what happened to him. So yeah, it was interesting. So, I mean, I'd recommend seeing it if it pops up on whatever the streaming giant that wins, as they're all collapsing.
Discovery Plus.
Right. So I don't know. I recommend it. It's like a good popcorn movie. You know, it's like, oh, it's Wednesday. What the hell am I going to do? I'll watch It's Gone in the Night with Winona Ryder. The other thing I was going to say, though, because we were talking about musicals, I am totally here for this, like, Cats is like a ballroom show that's like going around. They put like an audition out that they're going to do like a new staging of Cats as they're not going to be cats. They're going to be actual people, like ballroom contestants kind of thing, which I kind of live for because Cats is kind of like that, you know, like each cat has its song to be like, I'm the best, you know, and like, you know, clacking fans and whatever. I'm here for it. Like, yeah, you know,
category is Railway.
Yes. Exactly. Like I posted on like Twitter or something, like, you know, Paris is burning because she's in heat. Like Cats is the sexiest like musical there is. You know, I mean, it's like people in leotards shoving their genitalia in audiences' faces. They're super horny. I think that'd be great for ballroom. So just to, you know, mention a musical since you all at High School Musical. Oh, I love Cats. I'm unapologetic. I even enjoyed the movie. It was fucking bonkers fever dream, but like I was here for it. And if they do this in New York, I'm gonna have to fly there just to see this because it sounds really fun.
Joshua, who plays Elektra again? What's her name?
Oh, Dominique. What is her last name?
Is it Coleman?
Wait, I almost said Devereaux, but I know it's not.
Dominique Devereaux. That sounds like a name. I do like that. Dominique Jackson.
Dominique Jackson. Yes. Yeah, Dominique Jackson Angelista. For let her play let her play Old Deuteronomy.
The casting call is Old Deuteronomy is supposed to be like an aging drag queen. Grisabella, they're asking for trans actors, actresses, performers. And then everybody else, it's like anything. Like they're like, we've said some genders, but it's all up for negotiation. So like, just come show us what you got. Yeah, Mistopheles, I think, is supposed to be like non-binary. You know, yeah. So they're like playing with all these different.
Oh my god,
ideas.
I love this.
Magical yeah. mix Mistopheles.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Mix. I love it. Yeah. So I saw that this week and I'm like, I hope that's real because I'm totally gonna see that. Somehow, some way, I want that to happen. Otherwise, you know, we're watching the new American Horror Stories. It's fun in a group. You know, we have our Wednesday night TV watching group. So that's been fun. We're watching that Our Flag Means Death, which is funny. It's very What We Do in the Shadows for pirates. It's just stupid fun. You know, I try not to think too deeply about it. I think that's really kind of, that's been the week at least. So, yeah. Joe, you watch anything of note?
Of note? Yeah, I started today. Oh, my God. On my lunch break, I was like, I want to watch something stupid. So I started Uncoupled on Netflix.
Oh, no. Okay.
Thank you. You are my people.
All of that was lovely. Oh, no. Okay.
Oh, right, God.
Let's get into it.
First of all, I'm just going to say it. Neil Patrick Harris is over. He's not good. He's not good. This part should be played by Sean Hayes, not Neil Patrick Harris, because there are very, it would be good if the tender moments hit better. Like, if the tender moments hit better, it would be amazing. And they don't. And the person who I know could do it would be Sean Hayes. But like in the first, oh my God, in the first like 15 minutes of the first episode, you get a cameo by Mark Shaman. And
oh, okay.
Yes, Mark. So first of all, like these fucking gays, like it's a type of cosmopolitan, like cis white gay aesthetic that we're going for, like yeah, these
it's
people.
It's a Darren Star show,
exactly. Right. I know. I'm just like
the A gays.
What did we expect, right? It's you're supposed to believe that like this couple is personal friends with like Mark Shaman, that Mark Shaman would come in and write like a custom song to because it's Neil Patrick Harris's partner who turns 50, and so. He throws him a surprise 50th birthday party without his consent. And then Mark Shaman sings a song for him in the style of Welcome to the 60s from Hairspray. But it's like, welcome to your 50s. And it's like, oh, God, did Kenny Ortega? Where's Kenny Ortega? Where's this? But where Darren Star's influence shows up the most is in the delicious casting, and the only redeeming quality of this entire thing, the delicious casting of Tisha Campbell and Marcia Gay Harden. Absolutely. Tisha Campbell plays the best friend. Marcia Gay Harden plays like the divorcee that, you know, someone's going to sell her apartment. It is candy for your mind. So yeah, it made my lunch break even better when I was working from home today.
Well, that's good. I have a question. So the reason I've been kind of avoiding the show is that it seems like it's extremely for straight people. Where it's like, I'm a gay man and I have to date again. And oh my God, a guy's butt can come to my house. Oh, and it's just like, it seems very like that. Is it like that?
Brennan, you're in my mind. Literally before I logged on, I was watching it, and the Neil Patrick Harris character Michael, he's like, oh, someone just messaged me on Grindr, he sent me a picture, it's kind of fuzzy, oh my God, it's a butthole, like,
oh yeah,
literally that. Now to their credit, like NPH, his partner, his estranged partner, because, you know, that's the whole spoiler alert, that's part of it. His estranged partner is played like Tuck Watkins. So, you know, they're doing their best to have like actual gay people play gay people. But it is very much not like, it's kind of like Happiest Season. Like,
okay.
That's the thing. It's not that it's like overly terrible or overly for the, it's not like it's overly for straight people, but it's just enough that like, it's for the white women who watch RuPaul's Drag Race.
Mm-hmm.
They know enough that they're in the loop, but it's definitely, yeah.
Yeah, it's just whenever I see a gay thing that's making jokes about Grindr and dick pics and hole pics and whatever, it's just like, can we dig a little deeper? It's like if someone's asking you to play a song by ABBA and they put on Dancing Queen, you know, like that's the first thing. Like, sure, and that's a good thing, but like we can do more.
Yeah. Does your mother know? Play. Mm-hmm.
It play just doesn't. Else. It doesn't feel like it rings true. Like, you know, because how old is Neil Patrick Harris's character supposed to be? Also 50?
No, he's a little younger. Like,
okay, so then. Yeah. So you're telling me that a queer guy in his 40s, like, is just now discovering these things? I mean, we've had apps for like 20 years, you know, I mean, or not like apps, but we had Adam for Adam and Manhunt. And, you know, these things have existed for at least 20 years since I, you know, was first on them at 18. Wink, wink. you know, so it's like, it just, a lot of that kind of stuff feels really hollow when it's like these days, like, you know, like, oh, dick pics. Oh, it just feels very like that. I mean, okay, it could describe a life. There can certainly be queer men out there that never absolutely did that, you know, so not to like, you know, again, like put out that image that like all of us are, you know, fucking sluts on everything, you know, not all of us are into that kind of culture, but to not be aware of it at all is, I don't know, it's just kind of strange to me. Again, and I'm only speaking from what you're talking about right now. You know, I didn't watch it just because, yeah, the whole like premise, I don't know. I was just like, I don't care about this. If it was like a lesbian and it was, you know, what's her name? Allison Janney. Like playing like a lesbian version of this, I'd probably watch it. But I just don't care about Neil Patrick Harris. I can't follow anything that he's like the lead of. I don't care.
No, that's totally fair. No, it's okay. But like, yeah, I crave gay content. Like, have either of you watched the other two?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. That show's really good, and it does modern gay storylines really well. Like, he's dealing with insta gays, and he's dealing with like, there's this incredible farce with this like daddy and his like boy who's also like their co-parents. It's good shit, and it's like actually stuff that's recognizably like, oh, that's something I've seen in my life, and is very funny.
Yeah, and they're also not putting too fine a point on it. They're not like, you know, you should get on Grindr. What's Grindr? Or like, they just, okay, this is kind of gross. I mean, first of all, I will fully, so they, something happens where, you know, the Neil Patrick Harris discovers that his partner or ex-partner now is on PrEP, and he's at the gym and he's like, oh my God, you know, he's on PrEP. He wants to fuck people without getting a disease. Well, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, this is not the most enlightened thing. I mean, I understand, like, I think, because you have to, right, you have to think about what is true for the world of the show, what is true diegetically, which is like, you know, this guy's a narcissist and very awful. So yeah, to him, that's distilling it down to what it means. And also in terms of like the arc of the season, like we're really supposed to feel we're starting to feel a specific way about Neil Patrick Harris's character, which like that, all of that just reinforces. But you know, we don't need that. Like, we don't, like, you know, we're not, I don't feel like, I'm like, oh, we don't really need to stereotype, you know, or stigmatize taking that. And, you know, at the very least, he's being safe. Like, that's
right.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm watching.
I don't know. See how you enjoy, like, you know, as it goes along, maybe it'll develop.
Maybe. I don't know. I we'll see. I would much rather have right now in my hands another season of the other two, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, wouldn't we all?
all right. Well, it sounds like everybody is, you know, doing their thing as always, watching, you know, some trash.
Oh yeah. Exclusively.
Your beard is looking wonderful. I know you said you were thinking about getting it cleaned up, but or cut or something. I overheard you saying something earlier when I was having my technical issues, but it looks glorious.
Whatever you overheard was a ghost. I don't know what you're talking about, but thank you very much.
Yeah, no, it looks, I think you had it back when we were talking in January and it looked amazing. And now it just, it looks even better. Look at that. It's just, I wish, I don't know how to do that. Are you using like an oil? Is it like chia seeds?
No, I mean the shape and thickness comes the way that your DNA asks it to, but, yours also looks very nice, Joshua.
Yeah, I just wish it was bigger. I saw this guy the other day. He had like long white hair and a long white beard. And it just looked rock and roll and cool. I'm like, oh man, I want to look like that. When, you know, because you can't see it, but a lot of my hair is going silver. And it's super, I like it a lot. But it's in an interesting, weird place. But I'm like, man, I want like a beard to go with it. Just be like fucking ZZ Top it in my 60s and 70s if I'm lucky.
Where did you find this guy? Was he helping a bunch of little people return a ring?
Oh my gosh. You know what it is actually? Because it wasn't totally white. It was like black and, you know, like salt and pepper. And I now remember what it was. It was totally fake. But it was Taika Waititi playing Blackbeard in Our Flag Means Death. It just came to me. That's what it was. And I was like, he looks awesome. That's what I want to look like as I age. Just let my hair just do whatever it's going to do and let my beard go. I don't know.
I totally thought you were talking about like a man you met on the street or something.
Me too.
No, sorry. I realized what it was as I was talking. I'm like, oh, it was from that Our Flag Means Death. So it's totally fake, probably.
That was very much like when you talk to people and you say like, oh, my friends were talking about this thing, but it's not your friends. It's people in the podcast. That's what happened.
That's exactly what happened. I have seen some awesome pictures of dudes with like long white hair on like on Google and stuff. Because sometimes I look and dreaming, you know, like what might I look like when all my hair is white?
To print out and put on your vision board.
Exactly. Yeah, because I totally keep a vision board. That's very me. All right, enough of this nonsense. We are going to take a real quick break, and we will be back to discuss Godzilla.
Hey, everybody, I'm Chris Fafalius, and I'm the producer of Krista Makes a Podcast and the host of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
And I'm Matt Kelly, host of Horror Movie Night and the producer / the head of content for the Geekscape Podcasting Network.
Between the two of us, we have, believe it or not, 25 years of podcasting experience, and we want to help you start your own podcast.
We know podcasting, and we want to share that knowledge with you.
So whether you're new to podcasting or you want some feedback on your currently active podcast, we want to help.
Or perhaps you're just overwhelmed with all of the editing work. Well, we can help you with that also.
You can check out our website at weknowpodcasting.com for more information.
We're excited to help your podcasting dreams become a reality.
All right, so we are back. So this month on the show, we are doing a deep dive into giant monsters. Last week, we talked about King Kong. This week, we're getting into Godzilla, 1954. Japanese, I think this is considered like the first like kaiju film, possibly, or like kind of created the...
Yeah, especially in reference to Japan creating the kaiju film, absolutely.
All right. Directed by Ishiro Honda. Screenplay by Takeo Murata and Ishiro Honda. So there we go. Writer, director. We love that. We did watch. So this is available, at least for now, on HBO Max. They did finally release in 2004, I guess 50 years after the first film came out. They released the actual original Japanese cut, because what we saw in America for a really long time was a bastardized version of the film. So Joe, I'm really hope, like, this is one of those movies, like, I'm like, you can't really shoot down the analysis of it because it's not even subtext. Like, it's in the film, like, it's there. So you can't say you disagree with like what the film represents, because it's there. But I am curious.
Wow, way to be like, Joe, your opinion, if it's not this, it means shit.
I actually am hoping we can, like, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about, like, you know, the atomic of it all, but I am curious to see if people have other readings or like how maybe it's kind of developed, but we'll get there. First, Joe, I'm curious what your initial thoughts were in watching Godzilla.
Before I get to that, I love that, like, your initial, like, other readings, kind of like, I'm going to, like, your other reading of like the fly is about AIDS. right? Like, is that like, are you saying like Godzilla is actually about like, you know, something else? Anyway, so I don't have such readings. I actually, for Joshua knows this, for a film that's older, that's in, you know, black and white, I enjoyed it a lot. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought that I can tell, like, you can, you know how, like, you watch a movie and you can just tell that, like, there are very, you can't express it, but, like, you just, like, there are specific reasons why this film is in the Criterion Collection. And that's why it's on HBO Max, because HBO Max has a bunch of Criterion films listed in the catalog. So, you, yeah, it's like, you can just feel that, like, yep, I know exactly why this isn't a Criterion film. And that's what it felt like. It was beautiful to watch. It was appropriately like campy, obviously now because of, you know, modern special effects, and like, you know, it's very much like it's very much the beginning of SpongeBob, right? with the island, with the boat, with the boats there in the water in the first. But I enjoyed it. Okay. This one, Joshua, add this to the list. This one I would watch again.
Wow.
Awesome. Look at that. Yeah. Picking up another one.
I don't know. And, you know, Brennan, you can, you know, in your expertise, I don't know if I would watch sequels, but I really enjoyed just this film. So.
Awesome. Well, that makes me super happy, because I agree. It's really fun. You know, film. And again, like, because like on this show, we talk so much about like cultural anxiety and how horror, like, you know, helps us process. I mean, this is like, you know, like there was a, like right before they started working on the film, like a boat got involved in like radioactive fallout from the US military. You know, a lot of people got really sick from radiation poisoning. One of the members died. Like that happened, right? So like the opening scene is like directly inspired by that. And then obviously beyond that, the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki really influenced the film in ways that, like, I was watching a video. I mean, maybe Brennan, like, you know, if you know a little bit more about this, but even the design of like Godzilla, like when he comes out, like he's not designed like a lizard. He's like scar tissue that mimics like what, like the burns that people were affected by. Like they showed pictures of like how their skin looked and how his skin is like modeled. And then his head comes up, and it's like a mushroom cloud shape. Like there are just things about, like there are just these like cool details. Again, maybe that, I don't know if that's reaching or not, but that was something when you looked at the pictures of like the burn side by side, you're like, wow, that, if that wasn't on purpose, that's kind of, that's a really kind of creepy coincidence, because he is kind of modeled like that. But anyway, so let's get into it, Brennan. Why Godzilla? What is it about these movies that you love, or this film first, and then we'll get to the sequels.
Well, I mean, the thing that I love about Godzilla is that it has, I mean, the Godzilla, the franchise as a whole does have a reputation for being, you know, like big goofy monster movies. And I love big goofy monster movies. I love watching people knock down buildings, and you get a lot of that in this movie. You get a lot of a guy in a suit that has folds in a place where an animal probably wouldn't have folds, you know, kicking down a bunch of model buildings in fake Tokyo. And that's some great shit. But the thing is, our perception of that was of Godzilla as a goofy thing was partially diluted by the fact that America got the Raymond Burr version for so long, where it's like, oh, I'm a white reporter from America and we're talking to some Japanese people. And I don't think the film was as compromised as it could have been in that version, but it did cut out a lot of the subtext that you get in the actual version, because the original movie is actually a really harrowing horror film on top of everything. As long as you can get in the vibe with older special effects, it's really challenging and really it's extremely hard to watch in terms of the tone. It's a grim movie, and I like that. I think that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely agree. There are definitely moments in the film that are really like, again, I was surprised because I had seen the original growing up, not the original, sorry, the American, like King of the Monsters. I'd seen that a lot growing up. You know, we grew up when Power Rangers was like new in America. So I wasn't like against like watching something like this. Like, and I love them and Tarantula and all these like monster movies from the 50s that are like giant radioactive, you know, creatures. You know, so it's like, I was kind of prepared for it to be a lot like, you know, I'm like, how much could they have changed? you know, besides dubbing people or whatever. And what I read was they took out like 40 minutes and added 30 minutes or something like that. But what really, really surprised me, and I made a note somewhere, is like the palpable real horror that's on display. And they were showing like pictures from the bombings with like scenes from the film, like where this woman is like crouching with her two children, like how that was like directly pulled from, you know, a famous photograph of a woman, you know, protecting her kids. You know, there's a part where the woman's holding her daughter or a little girl as she's screaming and crying. It's super grim. It's very bleak for like, oh, it's a stupid monster movie.
What is it like where that scene you're talking about, Joshua, it's like, you know, we're going to be with dad soon, or like, we're going to be with
Yeah, we're gonna be with daddy. Yeah.
Oh my god. I was like, dang, Japan really knows how to go for it.
Yeah. And then there's that very quiet moment towards the end where it's the children's choir just singing a prayer for absolution, essentially.
Yeah.
It is some like straight to the gut stuff.
Yeah. No, it truly, there are just like so many moments in it that I'm like, wow, this is like a lot more serious than I was expecting. Which again, you know, growing up and like learning like U.S. history from a U.S. History perspective, it's like, you know, they bombed Pearl Harbor and we dropped the bomb on them and everybody's so proud of that fact. And, you know, so people don't, you know, at least proud Americans that think dropping bombs on people is, you know, a good thing. So to kind of have a better understanding of the other side of that and this like piece of art that is a direct response to this horrific event, it's like, yeah, it's not a surprise that it's pretty grim in parts. Yeah, very, very, very moving in times. let's see. This is gonna kill Joe because he loves when I talk about things like this. But the other side of it is how much I felt bad for Godzilla itself. you know, it's like this creature that's just like minding its own fucking business, and like people keep dropping H-bombs and testing things. So it's like this interesting conversation besides the atomic stuff, but like, you know, nature having to sort of rise up against us. And it's like, he's also maybe terrified, a little bit of Cloverfield, you know, the Cloverfield monster's like a baby, you know, running wild and scared, you know? So I feel like there's this whole other conversation sort of about the creature himself. Like I thought was sad, but again, that's that Joe's just looking at me because it's like, the fly, he can't take it. King Kong, so sad. I'm so sad for King Kong. You know, he just, well, Joe can't.
King Kong has to be sad for King Kong.
Yes.
But yeah.
That's true.
I think that later Godzilla movies do recognize this thing that you're talking about. And well, of course, it's a franchise, so they kind of position him more as a hero later on, and then they have conversations. The American one gets really preachy about how like he is the like guardian of nature or whatever. I do think you're right in the sense of Godzilla is not an innocent in the sense that we understand it, but just a literal force of nature. I think in this movie we're not meant to empathize with Godzilla, except for the fact that we brought him upon ourselves. Like he was chilling, he was doing his thing, and we fucked it up and brought him out to eat everyone, and that's our bad. Whoops.
Yeah, that's what kind of my thing. It's like Mother Nature. It's not something to be like reasoned with. Like, you know, we get mad at things that happen. It's like, I mean, that's what it does. Like, that's what hurricanes do. That's, you know, it's terrible. Obviously, I'm not like, oh, you're trying to belittle it. But yeah, there was just part of me that just kind of was like, I'm kind of sad for him too. This whole thing is sad, but not sad than the people. Like, obviously.
No, and I don't think Ishiro Honda would disagree with you necessarily. Like I said, in this movie, not so much, but he directed a bunch of Godzilla movies, but he also directed Rodan, which is about this giant, like, ancient pterodactyl creature. And when Rodan perishes in the end, it is explicitly a tragic moment. And so Honda was not opposed to crafting that kind of feeling for the monsters, but Godzilla, we're not meant to give a shit about Godzilla. We're meant to give a shit about Dr. Sarazawa and the way that getting rid of Godzilla fractures his soul.
Yeah, oh my God, you're in like both of our minds, because that's exactly where I was going to go next. Is like, okay, so, you know, you have this sort of Godzilla is like again, I was saying sort of, you know, a victim in circumstance, you know, or consequence of like our actions. But the other kind of big conversation here is like, you know, science, like the scientific study of something versus like, you know, the harm it can do. And is it, and that is like, such like a great conversation on like, yes, we can build bombs. Yes, we can nuke people, but should we? So that whole conversation also really surprised me. Cause I just don't, I mean, again, I saw it as a kid, like 25 years ago, maybe. So I don't remember, I wouldn't have paid attention to like the love triangle that first of all, really surprised me as well. I'm like, what is going on? You know? But yeah, his character, yeah, creating this thing and then being like really terrified of what would happen if it got into the hands of, you know, the government or specifically the Americans. We want to keep this away from them, probably. Just in the context of, you know, of what happened with the bomb. But yeah, I don't know. Speak to that if you want about him.
Sure. Well, here's the thing. So this movie exists because the Ray Harryhausen movie Beast from 20,000 Fathoms exists. This movie is very much put onto the framework of an American 50s B movie, but it's just slathered with Japanese sentiment and storytelling and character and things like that. And so I think that this movie
That came before this 20,000. Mm-hmm. That came. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, this movie is very much trying to capitalize on that film's success.
Okay.
Cool. But yeah, so basically, I think it comes by its subtext, honestly, in the sense that they want to tell this horror film, and then you got to write a script for a horror film, and you got to have a theme and a hook, and they were like, well, we got all this shit going on. Yeah. And yeah, Dr. Sarazawa's challenge in this movie is startlingly layered for what you're getting from a B movie in the 50s, from any country. But I would say probably the most interesting sci-fi character of the decade anywhere, probably. The struggle that he's facing is so real and legitimate and something that would make perfect sense at this time. And there's this implication that he, you know, he knows German scientists, and well, how could he have known that? You know, he was involved in the war, and he saw the price that Japan had to pay in the war. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know where the end of what I'm saying is, but it is a really interesting thing for this type of movie to be talking about. And the thing that fascinates me about this movie is that it was a success. I just can't imagine that if I was, you know, a Japanese citizen in 1954, feeling good about seeing this movie, because it's so like one-to-one reflective. Like it's such a metaphor for the atomic bomb that the characters themselves figure out that it's a metaphor for the atomic bomb before the end of the movie, pretty much. Like those people on the train who are talking about like, well, I just had to, barely survived Nagasaki and now this. And it's just, anyway, it's wild.
Yeah, I had read that because we're only 9 years removed, like, you know, so not even a decade has gone by. Japan is still very much living with like the reality of this nuclear holocaust that, you know, was visited upon them. And they're still the only country, I think, that has had an atomic weapon or a nuclear weapon used against them. I actually read that a lot of people didn't like it didn't do well right away in Japan. And then the kind of American, at least this was this could be a total like American myth, but it came over here, was re-edited, was a hit, and then Japan sort of reassessed it and kind of embraced it more. Is that a history that you've seen?
I would say that the American cut of Godzilla is responsible for Godzilla 3 and beyond like kickstarting. But Godzilla Raids Again, which is the sequel to this film, it came out 5.5 months later. Like rushed it into production, so it must have done well regionally. To some degree, I don't have the numbers though.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, if people go and see it, you know, even if they're like, "Wow, we don't like this film because it's too close to home," I was just trying to critical response in Japan. It just says, yeah, reviews were mixed. It was exploiting, you know, that boat accident that like happened just months before they produced it, obviously was still very sensitive subject. So to see it so, you know, recreated for the screen in a horror picture. Mm-hmm. It just says that, yeah, I guess that film critics began to appreciate it more. But that makes sense. If they rushed a sequel, then yeah, it must have made money, even if people hated it. Like, hey, we made a bunch of money. So, like, might as you know, like, how, what are the standards in 1954 for a creature film to do well enough to get a sequel?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of context that I don't have for that time in that region that I wish I did.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was just, again, and this, like, that was something I read on Wikipedia, something I read on some other, where was that other article? That was about the Lucky Dragon 5. So that was the name of the boat that went down. It was 23 people were on it. The nuclear fallout from the United States, Castle Bravo, thermonuclear weapon test. And then, yeah, it was like reimagined in the opening of Godzilla. That kind of, you know, upset people, obviously, for obvious reasons. But again, I was thinking like, yeah, I guess trying to think in America, when did Cloverfield come out? That was like 2008. So yeah, 7 years after, you know, 9/11, you have this creature tearing up, you know, I mean, very much like part of that, still that anxiety of invasion and, you know, everything that, you know, Americans were experiencing. So I guess, you know, we've definitely seen this in our time, you know, making use of that cultural anxiety.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, yeah, that poster had the head of the Statue of Liberty, you know, on it, you know, it.
Yeah.
I guess we're just all sick fucks, you know?
Right. Well, again, it is a way to, you know, process a national, like, what do you do? Like, again, yeah, like people make comedy, they laugh about tragedy and horror people. We're like, well, it's a bruise that we're going to push on until it feels numb enough, you know, until we can get away from it. The only thing, you know, something else that I'm very interested in, I guess, in discussing. Well, no, let's wait. Let's get into the sequels around Godzilla, because there's 36 films so far, right? But I'm sure others are in production. The list that you have, I can't see the. Did you put King of the Monsters on here?
No, I actually have not seen the American cut. I will at some point, but I was curious about it after I rewatched Godzilla, but I was like, I'm not going to watch it again right now. I need some space.
Yeah, no, totally. That makes sense. I was just looking through. I was like, man, is it so bad that he didn't even put it on his list? Like, I'm not even going to rank it.
It'll go on the list when I see it, but it was not a priority because I wanted to see the Japanese cut wherever I could. I think the only one that I didn't was King Kong versus Godzilla, the original one from the 60s, because I was just going along with what the Criterion set was throwing at me, because I do have the big giant Showa era Criterion set that has like 14 films.
Wow. I want to talk, because you put Shin Godzilla as second, and I was at lunch today with some friends, and I was like, oh, you know, I watched Godzilla, and we're going to record an episode about it. And one of the people like lit up and was like, Shin Godzilla is like, just, you know, is my favorite. It's the best. And you rank it second. And I'm curious what is about it that, you know, makes it second after the original.
Shin Godzilla, it occupies a very similar space that the original Godzilla does, in that it is applying Godzilla to a horrible event that happened in Japan. In this case, it was the Fukushima nuclear meltdown that happened. I believe that's what it was called.
2011, 2012.
Yeah. I didn't have my notes on Shin Godzilla right in front of me.
Totally.
Yeah.
Fine.
So it's reacting to that. And it does have a little bit of goofy effects. It's a little CGI reliant, in a way that, you know, you do have to distance yourself from, but at the same time, it is delivering these images that are startlingly beautiful at times and extremely harrowing. But it's also the human plot has this really excellent satire about the government's scrambled response that completely fails to address any of the pertinent problems about Godzilla showing up, which also it reads super well in the pandemic era as a government catastrophe relief satire also.
All right. Well, I really want to watch that now because I was really surprised because he just like lit up, wanted to talk about Shin Godzilla. I'm like, oh, I haven't seen it yet. So let's, I'll watch it and we'll discuss it.
Yeah, that film is excellent.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, you rank it second. So yeah, maybe, or at least current on this list that you, that I found.
Were you saying something, Joe?
Yeah. I was going to say that Joshua, of course, you know, has lunch with people who, you know, have seen multiple Godzilla films. I was at lunch with people and we were talking about Godzilla and, you know, Shin Godzilla is the one. I'm like, get out of here. Go to bed.
It was a friend.
You talk to me and I would talk about Shin Godzilla.
Yeah, but like Josh was talking like he's like, I just had like a casual ladies lunch, like, and you know, Shin Godzilla came out.
That is 100% exactly what happened because it's a friend of ours. It was her husband who I was meeting for the first time. And she's like, oh, this is the guy I was telling you about with the podcast. And so then we just hit it off and started talking. And then Godzilla, you know, came up. So I was like, I'm going home to record about Godzilla. And he was like, Shin Godzilla, this is the best. I'm like, okay. Awesome. That makes me happy. So I'm going to have to watch it because, I enjoy like a big monster picture. I love like the Blob and, you know, yeah, give me some giant thing attacking. What is it about giant monsters attacking city? Like, why? Why do you think we love those kind of movies? Because they haven't gone away. Like, we keep remaking Godzilla, we keep remaking King Kong, where, you know, we have the that Pacific Rim film that came out a few years ago, which I know is like kaiju related as well. I believe I didn't see it, but
it is.
It feels like it, you know, it's one of those. And like I mentioned earlier, like growing up with like the Power Rangers, like we love when the monsters would get big and, you know, terrorize the Zords. And it's just such like such a thing in horror. And I'm, you know, I don't know. I'm wondering what people think about that. Why? What is it about that in particular?
Do you have any thoughts, Joe?
Yeah.
I mean, I love that you're saying that because like you're the one who like empathizes and feels sorry for the monster in all of this, like, you know, just living their life and all that stuff. And I think that's what's interesting is that, like, you know, with my understanding, again, not having seen most of Godzilla franchise and most of any like giant kaiju franchise, the idea, right, is that like we don't know anything about them, or it's hard, like we cannot communicate with them. They're just kind of there, and now we have to deal with it in the same sense of like, you know, a disaster. But also at the same time, like, you know, we are the causes of it. So it's like, I think, you know, to kind of go back to some of our conversations we've had with science fiction horror is the idea that, you know, we are the ones who caused this. We did this, we caused this to happen. And you know, we're reaping what we've sown. And now it's come back. Nature's come back to come back for her revenge. But you know, to your point, it's just like, you know, I don't know. I think it's one way to have a disaster movie and put it in a horror context. Because when you're talking about like hurricanes and things like that, like these are things that just occur that, you know, have no sentience, that just, you know, are. And then you have monsters that come in. And it's like, okay, well, we assume malicious intent instead of taking it as like, you know, we would take some sort of like a hurricane. And that's the one thing that that's one of my favorite things that I loved about oh my gosh, what was his name? Dr. Yamane, right?
Oh, Yamane? The father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the father. He's just like, we need to study this. He's very like Indiana Jones, like this belongs in a museum. Like we need to study this and figure out why it was resistant instead of just trying to kill it, because maybe we could learn more things from it. But at the same time, it's just like, no, we assume malicious intent because it is harming us. And so obviously, like we have to go strike back. Brennan.
It's actually
Yeah, I'm that's actually a really interesting point. The idea that it is this kind of natural disaster, and that's something that does happen in the kaiju movies. Like there's not really a sense that Godzilla is even aware that we as humans exist. He's just doing his thing. Like we don't matter to him. We are but ants to Godzilla. Mm-hmm. But the fact that this big force of nature does have a face and does have sentience means that it can be defeated, and it can give that catharsis that horror does provide, especially in terms of, like, you know, if we are dealing with these nuclear fears and you can't, I mean, obviously, you know, it's America's fault. There is the face you can put on that, but that's still ambiguously, America is not a sentient being in and of itself. Mm-hmm. But then also I think on the flip side, like, especially in the later movies, you're cheering on Godzilla when he's knocking over shit because it's super cool and it's super fun to watch. And I think that just appeals to that kind of, like, lizard brain part of us. Like, I know almost no one who, you know, if say you're demoing a house or something, I don't know of anyone who would say no to the offer of, like, taking a sledgehammer and just, like, bashing some shit up. And, like, you know, being given the opportunity to do that, there's something really, like, fun and cathartic and human about that.
That is actually a really great point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. You know, because I was, like, thinking a lot about, I feel like some of our earliest, you know, like, as we built boats and went out on the sea, you know, you'd have these giant waves, you know, that do exist, you know, these huge mega waves. And we didn't have a way to explain that. So we're like, you know, there's giant monsters out in the sea and, you know, people see a manatee and they're, oh, it's a mermaid. You know, like, we make up these things to, like, explain, you know, our world. And, you know, we've been talking about, like, our effect on the climate since, I think there's, like, a newspaper from, like, 1912, you know, like, worried about the climate and how, what we're doing to nature and what it's going to reap, you know, on us. So it's like, I kind of think a lot more about that, but actually sometimes, yeah, just seeing stuff blow up and break apart. Like,
that's why, yeah, I watch action movies, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a very, very good point. Yeah. Yeah. But I also, I like what you're saying too, Joe, that sometimes, yeah, like, you know, we see, like, zombies can, you know, be, colonialist, colonizer, you know, conversations. You know, we can see, like, how we've talked about vampires and, you know, all these different sorts of creatures can represent different things. But yeah, something like Godzilla is a really good way to, like, bottle up our and anthropomorphize our, mm-hmm, our fears of things that we cannot control or something that's brought down upon us. Cause I mean, what was it? I saw earlier, 129,000 people were killed on the 6th and 226,000 people were killed on the 9th of August, 1945 in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, most of whom were civilians, most of whom had nothing to do with, like, whatever happened. It's just this horrible thing and they're left with it. And so as an artist, as somebody who's like, how am I going to process this grief and this trauma? Let's put it in this giant monster that comes and attacks us. Like, it's such a, you know, a direct, it's just so, you know, like I said earlier, it's not subtext, like, it's in there. Like, this is clearly about the H-bomb and the atomic power and, you know, all this stuff is, you know, waking these monsters up and destroying our world. I will say the only other Godzilla movie I've seen is whatever the first one is with Mothra. Cause I was obsessed with Mothra. I had a big Mothra, like, action figure. Oh. I didn't even have a Godzilla, but I had Mothra and it made noise. It was really neat. And I liked that whole storyline of Mothra and, like, the twins. And so that's the only other Godzilla movie I've seen. I would like to see Mothra come back. Have they done any movies with Mothra? Like, you know, I guess it now in, like, the 2000s and the remakes.
Oh, well, I mean, there's a shitty CGI Mothra in those American ones, like Godzilla King of the Monsters. All the monsters are just fucking gray blobs in that movie. I was really annoyed by that. But no, there's plenty of Mothra movies. And it makes perfect sense to me that you as a person, from how I've experienced you through podcasts, seem to be really electromagnetically drawn to, like, female and femme presenting performers and characters and figures.
Yeah.
And of course you'd be like, yes, Mothra, she's the girl one. Let's watch the Mothra movie.
I never really, I just thought she was beautiful. Like, those wings and the whole thing. Yeah. Like, you know, and they were singing to her. I'm like, this is amazing. Ooh. I love this whole like
Mothra got you clocked, Joshua.
Hey, I am proud of that. That is nothing to be ashamed of.
No, you know? Not at all.
So yeah, so I enjoyed that. Are there any like, you know, out of all the others besides Shin Godzilla that you'd be like, you know, watch this other, you know, what are the, you know, of your favorites?
Okay. Joshua, to your tastes, I would say my top three are probably where it's at. So Shin Godzilla and then the sequel, Godzilla Raids Again. A lot of people didn't like Godzilla Raids Again, both at the time and throughout history. But I really responded to that movie. I think it is obviously a less potent film than Godzilla is, but it still has some really interesting kind of wartime imagery. Like there's a hauntingly beautiful scene of a seaside town turning off all the lights so Godzilla can't see them. Wow. That's very reminiscent of like, you know, England during the Blitzkrieg or like any sort of air raid kind of wartime situation.
Wow. Is that the same Godzilla or is it a different monster or is it intended to be the same? Because they like kill Godzilla in the original.
Yeah, I think it's a different Godzilla.
Okay, I don't know.
Yeah, I think getting into the specifics of that is a very tangled web to weave.
Okay, that's fine.
But I think that Godzilla Raids Again is specifically a different Godzilla because the first Godzilla is dead as a doornail. He is a skeleton at the bottom of the sea.
Yeah.
I think the Godzilla of the 60s and 70s is mostly supposed to be the same Godzilla because he basically just wanders into the movie and then almost always the final shot of the movie is him just kind of piecing out back into the ocean.
I love it.
But as far as like other movies, basically, okay, so Ghidorah, the three-headed monster, is a really good one. He's a golden space dragon with three heads.
Yeah, I've seen
that
the
Godzilla gets to fight
figures of that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then I really liked Ibira, Horror of the Deep, which is about kind of like a big crab monster.
Oh, cool.
And it kind of starts off as this almost like 60s teen beach party movie, and then they end up on an island with like this weird kind of like Team Rocket compound that's trying to do stuff, and Godzilla's there. It's a wild movie. And then Destroy All Monsters, which is the Avengers of the Toho kaiju canon, where they just threw in like 18 different kaiju and just had them do shit, and it's great.
Wow. All right. Great. Well, I'm definitely going to check those out. That sounds like a lot of fun. Destroy All Monsters, especially. That sounds fun. Like, just give me a ton of monsters doing whatever. Sashing, shanting.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, that movie has a scene where the lower tier kaiju Baragon, who I love very much, destroys the Arc de Triomphe in Paris.
All right. That sounds fun. One last question.
I have a Baragon right behind me where I'm recording.
Oh, cool. Very nice.
That's awesome.
That is cool. So my last question would be of the, because they remade it when I was growing up in 1998 with,
Matthew Broderick.
So we have that remake that was like, you know, taking the original and remaking it. And then they remade it again, like just a few years ago, right? Do you have a preference for any of those? Like,
if you have to watch an American Godzilla movie, the 2014 Gareth Edwards one is the best one.
Okay.
I think it does really well at kind of building tension and creating set pieces that escalate as they go along. It's not a perfect film, but you know, if you want to look at Aaron Taylor Johnson fill out a shirt and then Godzilla stomps some buildings, it's pretty good.
Okay, so no love for the Broderick one. Well, and actually, here I see it's very, very low on your list. But I remember that being a huge deal, like with that song that used like cashmere, and that was every fucking where. And when I was, you know, 13 or 14, like that was like such a huge deal. So I guess I lied earlier because I did watch that as a kid, but I've not seen it since then. Alrighty. Oh my gosh. I love like watching these movies. It's so fascinating. Like, again, there's this whole, like, idea like horror is like recently gets woke or what. And it's like, we've been having these conversations in horror, you know,
yeah.
I mean, forever. Like nothing is ever just, I think in the article that I'm attaching to all of these movies, it's about, what's it called? look at me knowing exactly my, the theory and appeal of giant monsters, you know, and one of the thing was like, you know, there's no such thing as pure entertainment. Like everything we watch, like we're in view, you know, we're putting our, you know, thoughts on it. It's made for some reason. It's having some sort of conversation, whether we agree or disagree, or we think it's trash or we don't think it's trash, or it's woke or it's elevated or it's not. Everything,
and whether it's intentional serves. Or not.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. You know? So I really liked watching this, cause I'm like, man, this is so like clearly what they're talking about. I mean, it's not like we don't have to dig very far here. And for that to be something in like the 50s, to tell like, again, this really heartbreaking kind of story, in a fucking, you know, rubber suit creature is, incredible. So I actually really, am sad that we kind of took so long to get to Godzilla. Cause I just, you know, it's one of those movies because everybody's like, well, we know what Godzilla is about. It's about the atomic bomb. So I just felt like maybe we couldn't really dig into it, but this was actually really fun to talk about.
I'm so glad. And sorry, but before we leave, I do have to drop that Akira Ifukube's score fucks in this movie. It's such a good composition.
Mm-hmm. Almost by the end, I was singing it. I was humming along with it. And I'm like, oh my God, this is really, really good.
Yeah.
This is one of those that like they need to figure out how to make it so that way you can watch it with like an orchestra. I just like, oh, like an orchestra. Ooh. Or some sort of big thing. Cause I think it would be amazing.
Do the whole thing. Yes. Oh, yeah. Joe, that's a great idea. Why don't we have all the money?
I know. I mean, well, you know what? I mean, like we are 2 years away from a significant anniversary of this film. So, you know, there's nothing stopping someone from doing it now and having it ready.
That's true. Let's go to the San Diego Symphony and say, listen, we have an idea. Like, hear us out. And at the end, a giant thing will destroy the symphony. No.
Yeah.
The other note I have is like, what is the obsession with like destroying trains? Like King Kong destroys a train, Godzilla. I was thinking of Audrey too, and like the original ending of like Little Shop. Like we love to see people like riding on a train as a monster like comes by and then like eats it. I don't know. That's delightful to me. That's such a trope in these movies.
Well, I think there's something compelling about the inertia of being on a train because you can't control where you're going. And like when you're going into Audrey 2's mouth, you're like, oh, well, there we go.
Yeah. It's like, I love this. It keeps popping up in these movies. Like, yes, we have to have a train doing something. But anyways, all right. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to speak with us. Tell the peoples where they can find you.
Well, I do a million things. Pretty much all of them I tweet about at It's Raining Brands on Twitter, but you can also follow me at The Burning Clem on Instagram. I write movie reviews on my blog, Popcorn Culture, but also at Alternate Ending, where I also do podcasts, and I also write news for Screen Rant. So check out all of those things, and most of that is on my Twitter.
All right, there we go. Joe, any final thoughts?
When you were saying, you know, like when they say now modern horror is too woke and, you know, basically saying like this movie proves that it's always been, I was going to say, she already done been woke. I just wanted to make sure I got that in there.
All right.
We already been woke.
We already been new about,
we already
this,
been about, new about this wokeness.
All right. Well, as always, thank you so much to you, dear listener, and everybody on our Patreon. We so much appreciate your support, helping us keep the lights on at Fright School Academy for Wayward Girls and Joe. Good night.
I'm not one of the girls.
She's a lady.
Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.